Every day, millions of men go to work questioning their purpose and how to leverage their gifts for the advancement of God's kingdom. Join us as we hear stories from other men just like you and me who have discovered the answer and are willing to share some wisdom they've learned along the way. Gathering wisdom is like dropping pennies in a jar. Over time, our jars fill up and overflow into the lives of others. Welcome to The Drop.
So, welcome to The Drop.
Thanks, Mike.
Can you please introduce yourself?
My name is John Wilbanks. I'm married to Jeannie. We've been married 45 years.
Congratulations.
As in March of this year. Thank you. We were high school sweethearts, and we have two children, a son and a daughter, that are both adults now, and I have three grandchildren.
Okay.
Two boys and a girl.
All right. And where do you live, John?
We live in Pismo on Campana Street, just above the Five Cities Outlet Center.
Okay. All right. And how long you been in the area?
Been in the area this round since 2010, but I actually went to school at Cal Poly and left the area, came back, left the area, and we're back.
Okay. So, what was your degree in from Cal Poly?
I graduated with a degree in city and regional planning.
Okay. And did you pursue a career in that?
I did. Yes. Okay. It was one of those things where I was kind of trying to find my way in terms of what I wanted to do in my career. My brother was already going to Cal Poly in natural resource management. And he said, come on up to Cal Poly. You've always liked architecture and design, and check out their architecture program. So I did, and when I looked at the program, architecture didn't really fit me. But I saw this major called city and regional planning that I'd never even heard of, and whoever wrote the little synopsis of what the major was about and the kind of people that would like it, they knew me. And I went, wow, that sounds great. So I applied, got in, and graduated in 79 and never looked back.
So after
a great career. I really enjoyed it.
So after graduating with that type of degree, did you have a career in planning?
Yeah, and it was kind of multifaceted. A lot of planners that come out of the program, at the time I graduated, it was a little more mixed, but more so now, it's more of a public planning focus, where you go to work for a city as their planner. Whereas when I came out, I had the choice of choosing design or public policy, and I was more interested in the design side, so I went that way. And I went to work for a private planning and architecture firm in Palm Desert and worked there for about 5 years, and then moved. My wife and I wanted to get back to the Central Coast, and so I eventually landed a job in Pismo Beach as their city planner, and that moved us back here. And I was there a year. I should have mentioned I worked for the city of Indio, so I had some other public sector experience. But after a year in the role of planner here in Pismo Beach, the politics were more than I could deal with from a staff position. I should probably share that as a part of let me just say this. I got disenchanted there and I left, and I went to work for a friend of mine who was a contractor. My wife called it my midlife crisis. And I was only there 3 months and realized I was meant to be a planner. And a friend of mine knew that I was kind of unhappy, and he knew RRM Design Group, which at the time was Richmond and Rossi Montgomery, and he let them know that I was not happy, and they knew me from the city, so they came after me, and I went to work for them, and I finished my career working for them.
So. How many years did you work for RRM?
34.
Okay, and what was your main focus while you were there? What did you work on?
I would say probably mostly large-scale community planning, doing what in the business is referred to. You're probably familiar with the term master plan, but in the business, there's also legal documents called specific plans, and it community plans, and these are all kind of defined by California government code. And we became experts. I led kind of the group that did all the community planning and developing of these specific plans and entitling those developments. So we did projects from, you know, a few acres up to the my career project was a project up in the Roseville area called 12 Bridges. It was actually in the city of Lincoln, and it was 6,000 acres and 11,000 units. And I came in on the ground floor on that while cows were still grazing in the hills. So we designed it from the ground up.
So what did you do? What did that look like on a daily, weekly, monthly basis as a planner and in this group? What did your job entail? What did you do?
Well, back then, in the early days, I should say, it was literally at a drawing table, working off an aerial photo that we had someone fly and give to us, and drawing communities, neighborhoods, you know, laying out a city, and then developing that into more detailed graphics and developing the text that described what the intent was and the goals and policies that would guide the ultimate development of the community, and then get that approved at the city or county, and the developer would then take it and run with that.
Are you a detail-oriented guy?
You know, I'm really more of a big-picture guy.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's interesting. That kind of led me to ultimately the place where I ended up being an owner in my firm and you know, at RRM. Mm-hmm. And really kind of overseeing the whole works rather than just being the guy down mm-hmm. doing the dirty. But I did love that. I mean, it was fun.
Is there a project that you're really more proud of than others that you can think of?
There's a few. But the one I mentioned, 12 Bridges, is one in particular. And there's a number of reasons for that. At the time we did that project, it was probably one of the biggest in California to be planned all together like that. And then we got it approved and just over 2 years, all the way through the environmental and everything else, which was unheard of.
Okay.
But then the development of the project itself, it has really, it has come out the way we had hoped it would.
Okay.
Or that I had hoped it would. So, you know, but there's a lot of little projects around. We did a lot of work in the Central Valley, because I ended up leaving here and opening an office for the firm in the Central Valley as part of becoming a partner.
Okay.
And I was up there for 20 years in the Modesto area. But we did a lot of work for the cities down through the valley, doing redevelopment work for their downtowns and revitalizing little communities. And all of those were always a sweet spot.
Excellent. So in this long run in planning and developing and really kind of building California, which sounds really cool, were you able to bring your faith into the workplace?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting story, especially when you think of, you know, it's always easy to look back and see, oh, that's what God was doing. You know, when you're in the moment, it's not always that clear. And certainly we can't always see where God has taken us. But when I graduated Cal Poly, we really wanted to stay here. But there were no jobs. And the job I got offered was down in the desert. And we went down there. And I enjoyed it. My wife never did like the desert. But my work was very rewarding. But through my work, I ended up working for the city of Indio, and an individual that was the building official. I was a planner for the city. He was the building official. So we interfaced quite a bit on work issues. He was a believer, and I was raised in a household of no faith, really. And I had friends. My best friend in college was a Christian, carried his Bible with him in class, and he used to talk to me about Jesus and about the gospel, but it just didn't connect. And I felt like, you know, I'm an American. Aren't all Americans Christians? You know, I'm a good guy. What do I need? Who's this Jesus guy? I didn't really even believe that he was a real person, you know, to be honest. I go down to the desert and I meet Jim Prater. This guy became a friend of mine, and we started having dialogue. And at the same time, my wife and I adopted our daughter, and that process kind of piqued my wife's desire to be back in a faith, and she was raised Catholic. And so she wanted to start looking for a way to bring faith into our household, which kind of prompted me as well, obviously, because we're in this together. And so I was talking with Jim about faith, because he was pretty outspoken. Anyway, he said, how about if my pastor and I start a Bible study with you and your wife? And I said, well, I'll ask her. So I went home. She said, yeah, let's do it. So they came and they did a Bible study and took us from the Genesis, you know, through the scriptures, explaining the scriptures and how they, you know, how they unfold in history. And during that study, you know, again, I'd had people talk to me about Christ, and these guys, even though we were studying like the patriarchal age, the Mosaic age, and, you know, the prophets and all that, they were constantly coming back to Jesus and the gospel. And one night we're studying, and one of the passages being studied was Leviticus, and it was when the Lord directed Moses and Aaron how to do the incense sacrifice before the Lord, and it was very specific. And then it says, Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu, offered strange fire to the Lord, and he incinerated them immediately. He burned them up. And I just was like, my jaw hit the floor, you know, and I said, you're talking about a loving God. How can this be a loving God? These guys are trying to offer something to him, and he just tortures them, you know. And this pastor gently explains that God's a holy God, and he said, this is what I want. This is how you do it. And if you don't do it that way, it's not acceptable, and they didn't do it that way. And I went to bed that night struggling with that whole reality and that situation in Scripture, and I couldn't sleep. I could not sleep. And all of a sudden, it was almost like I heard a voice. But all of a sudden, it was like God said, my way, John, not your way. And I realized that I was interested in going where faith takes you, but I wanted it to be on my terms and my way, instead of accepting what's laid out in Scripture as the way through Christ. So I prayed to receive Christ that night in my bed, and woke up the next morning, and it was like a whole new day.
How old were you when that happened?
29.
And what did that do for you with respect to your lifestyle, how you lived your life, how you, you know, was a father, how you were a husband? What kind of change did that make?
It made some big changes, Mike. And I, looking back, and even at the moment, there were some mistakes I made, just being new in understanding Scripture and what it says about me, the husband being head of household. And, you know, I tried to make it more of, I'm in charge now. And that backfired big time. But my wife and I worked through that. And I had some other men in my life that kind of helped bring a little correction there as well. And of course, over time, as I got deeper in understanding the Scripture and my role as a husband and as a father and as a man, that, you know, our God is a loving God. So all the more I need to be a loving and grace-filled father to my family. So
since that middle of the night kind of reconciliation in your head, what kind of things have you had to do to not make it your way and make it God's way to have your walk work?
Man, that was an ongoing thing, obviously. And there would be times where, well, one of the first things I did, and I've been fairly, I can honestly say it has been a pattern and a habit I've developed from very soon after becoming a believer, to be in the Word in the morning, devotional time with the Lord before I do anything else in the day. And that means getting up extra early if I had to back when I was working. Now that I'm retired, I can sleep in a little more and get up and still do it. But actually, it is nice in the morning when it's quiet. It's the first thing. You know, the Psalms, David talks about, in the morning, Lord, I call out to you and I worship you. And I think there's just so much that can unravel in the day that if you don't make it your priority in the beginning of the day, things can just not happen and kind of fall apart. So I did that. And there were times along the way where clearly the Lord had to kind of correct me and, you know, step me back, and eventually embraced. And scripture memorization is another thing that I believe in strongly in. And in Ephesians chapter 6, it says, or it might be 5, I used to know the citing, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. And that aspect of giving yourself up for your wife, you know, it's something, as a man, it's kind of hard to do something.
What does that look like?
It means putting down the TV remote, I guess. No, it means, you know, I just, you'd think after 45 years, I wouldn't have this realization again. But as men, we go about our business and the wives are doing their thing. And you step in and you do something for your wife that normally she would have done, like cleaning the bathroom. And she doesn't say anything. And you kind of go, well, I clean the bathroom. She goes, yeah, well, I do it every day. So what it looks like is sacrifice, dying to self, you know, and being able to find that balance, looking for each other, giving each other the room to, okay, you do this, you do that. My wife and I developed, I know time-wise we may be, but my wife and I developed a pattern of alternating our anniversary so that this year's my turn. We're okay. Doing what I plan and what I say, and the other partner goes along with it.
Okay.
Know? And so little ways to become more of one. You know, that was one thing the scripture talks about, the two shall become one. Mm-hmm. And you really need to start thinking as one. Otherwise, you're just going to be in a wrestling match.
So coming from a non-faith-based home, having this moment of clarity, who Jesus is in your life as a young man, how has that played out? How did that play out in your career? And how did that play out with the rest of your family who wasn't raised in a faith environment?
Mm. That's a really good question, because my family initially kind of didn't think that we were serious. It was more like, you know, that'll fade. But over time, when it didn't, there was initial kind of whatever, you know, not accepting it. And then eventually, I have three brothers, two older and one younger. My younger brother eventually came to Christ, and I was actually able to baptize him, which was awesome. My two older brothers still are not, and I'm still praying for them, but they both completely accept and, in fact, even look to me for spiritual insight and guidance. You know, like, I'm the pastor of the family. My one brother always calls me Deacon John. Let's have Deacon John pray for the meal, you know.
Okay.
But, and he kind of kids about it, but there's a sincere thing there, you know.
Okay.
So,
what about your father? And my understanding is your father was a bit of a character.
Yeah, he was. He was a character. He was, he struggled with the idea of faith as well. And he tried to take us to Sunday school for a very short time when we were little tiny kids. But he was struggling with the whole thing and didn't accept it and felt it was kind of a weakness. Faith was a weakness in people. But he went on. He wanted to be an actor, so he was pursuing that career, and he never made it big. You know, his, he did do a movie where he co-starred in it. It was called Cry For Me, Billy, when it was released, and then it got panned by the critics and got sold to the syndicate, cable syndicate, and it kind of crushed him. But his main, he was a hard worker. My dad was a really hard worker. He had multiple jobs at many times, but he ultimately ended up being in construction work and building stuff. So
in the workplace, in the planning environment, how did you walk out your faith with your coworkers and the people you worked with? What did that look like for you in your life, John?
Well, you know, it was really exciting because we moved back up here to Pismo for that job in Pismo right after I accepted the Lord. It was 5 months of accepting the Lord. And my wife came to the Lord shortly thereafter. And we moved back up here, and I went to work in Pismo Beach. And it turned out the city clerk was a believer, the fire chief was a believer. There were a number of employees that were believers. And we actually, back in that day, I'm not sure if they still do or not, they had someone come in and pray to open the council meetings.
This is the city of Pismo Beach?
City of Pismo Beach. A local pastor or whatever would come in. And there was a couple of times where they couldn't get someone scheduled or they were a no-show. And the mayor would say, well, I guess we don't have anybody here that can open. And I remember the very first time it happened, the fire chief, Paul Hinlan, who actually used to attend here, he may still, I don't know, he and his wife live in Blacklake. He goes, well, Mayor, why don't we have John pray? You know, just, it was this spontaneous, weird thing. And so there were a number of council meetings where I was able to ask the city planner to open the meeting in prayer. And so living out your faith that way, you know, it was exciting, and it was, sometimes you weren't sure how it was going to be received. But I realized as I was going through that process, I hit a point in Pismo. Sorry, we're way over.
You're doing great. Keep going.
I hit a point in Pismo where the whole political environment, it seemed to just, what I felt as a planner was that my professional opinion and work I was doing was being dismissed, and the council was doing what they wanted to do just based on political pressure. And it just, I was, all of a sudden, it was the strangest thing. And I look back now and I think it was God doing it. It didn't feel like it at the time. It was one of those moments. Sometimes God will lead you to something, and other times he will just let you know that you're not where I want you to be and you're not really sure where to go. But I had a friend who owned a construction company, and tried to make a longer story short, he had actually wanted me to work for him when I first graduated, but he wasn't in a position to hire me. When he found out I was back in the area, he came after me and said, hey, I want to bring you in as my right-hand guy. And I'm thinking, and you might know Walter Brothers Construction, Don Walter. I worked for him and his dad when I was going to school. And we were kind of, he and I were kind of like friends. We're almost the same age. He's just a little older. But so he hired me, and he was training me to help him run the company. And I thought it was going to be my dream come true. And after 3 months there, I was miserable. You know, I thought, I really made a bad move here, Lord. Help me out, you know. And when I was in Pismo Beach, a local firm, Richmond, Rossi, Montgomery, got to know me, and they were primarily architecture, but they had just added planning as a discipline. And the guy that was leading it, Keith Gurney, he called me up and he heard I wasn't real happy where I was. And ironically, Walter Brothers was a client of RRM's as well. So anyway, he offered me a job. And I still remember it because of my faith. At that time, Richmond, Rossi, Montgomery, they were the firm to go to, but they had a reputation of being very worldly, partiers, you know, all the kind of living that you think is counter to your walk with the Lord, you know. And I struggled. I thought, I can't go to work with these guys. You know, this is like being unequally yoked. But I found out one of their architectural principals at the time, Bob Kitamura, was a Christian. So I contacted him separately. And I asked him how he dealt with that issue. And he shared with me that, and this was kind of a first opening of what God was doing in my career. But he said, as a corporation, and technically you're really only an employee. It's not like you're in a partnership where you're yoked to the other people. So I wouldn't view it in light of Scripture in that way. But I see it more as a ministry field. You know, it's an opportunity to get into an area where people need to know the Lord. And that just really kind of helped me over the hump. And as I prayed about it, the Lord finally gave me peace and I accepted the job.
Did you change the culture there?
I hope I did. I do hope I did. When I started work in September of 85, September 1st of 80, or right after Labor Day weekend, and on September 30th of 85, they fired about 15 people. The firm was only 30 people. Fired about 15 and dismissed 4 of the 6 owners of the company because the economy was so bad. And I thought, wow, I really made a good choice. But fortunately, planning was only a handful of employees, and it was still going because you plan when you're waiting. You know, the economy fluctuations hit the different disciplines differently. So I stuck it out, and I quickly became, and I give God the glory, I moved into a position of being kind of part of the leadership without officially being donned. You know, you are now officially a leader. And I think it's just because of how God was able to allow me to, you know, use who I am and my interactions with people. And so through that process, I eventually was offered a partnership in the firm, but I had to relocate to open an office because we saw the need to get out of San Luis or else the economy couldn't support a growing firm. And that's when I moved up to Modesto. And once my wife and I were told that was the opportunity, we started praying about it, and all our friends were going, are you out of your mind? You just worked hard to get back here. And I had even said to myself, I am never leaving again, you know, the Central Coast. And so we prayed hard about it, and we just really felt the Lord said, this is where I want you to go. And so we went, and we got up into Modesto. We chose to live in a little town of Oakdale. And opening that office and having I was the man in charge of the office. So it gave me the ability to have a little more influence of my choosing, my faith, and on the people in the office and how we operated, and was able to leverage that. And it was about 4 years or so, and plus we landed in a church up there that once we got into that church and I got invited to be involved in leadership, I realized, okay, God, this is why you moved me up here. You used my job to get me here. It's not so much my job that is the key thing. So we had a great time in helping to build a church up there, River Oak Grace Community Church. And in that process, I struggled. About four or five years into it, I thought, Lord, are you calling me out of my career and planning and into full-time ministry? And I just really was struggling. I was talking to my wife about it, and I felt this pull and this call into ministry. And we went on a leadership retreat with the church, and it went, just a long story short, we went to this place where it was a family relative had this kind of retreat center. And that individual who hosted us shared that he had this pulling from his secular job into ministry as a worship leader, and he took it. He moved into it, and he realized a year, almost a year into it, that it was the wrong move, that God wanted him where he was, and he just misunderstood what God was telling him. And so he quit and went back to his other job, and he coined the term, which I had never heard prior to that. He goes, I realized that God was calling me to be a minister, but to be a minister in the marketplace. And it is so important that we have people in business that are ministers in the marketplace and aren't keeping their Christian faith separate from their business, you know. And so it's always a fine line to walk. So when he said that, it was just like, bam, you know, the Lord said, minister in the marketplace.
And from that kind of reconciliation moving forward, that call that you realized was in the marketplace, you took advantage of that and was a minister in the marketplace?
Yes. Okay. I made it much more of an intentional thing. Instead of it, I'm a Christian in business, in the business world, I was much more thoughtful and intentional about it. And one of the things that came out of that was the idea of leadership in business. And as leaders, you have more influence. And as a Christian leader, you have more influence of the kind you want to exude. And so I was able to, develop a mindset more of being a leader and minister in the marketplace than just being an employee or a boss or whatever, you know. And I was able to take advantage of that, and I saw it was never there. There were a few times where there were evangelical conversations, you know, sharing the gospel and that sort of thing, but it wasn't like that was what I was about. I felt like it was almost a little more of lifestyle evangelism. Let them see God in me, and let them ask the questions, because sometimes you can be obnoxious if, you know. I heard a statement once that said, do you witness at your place of work, or do you work at your place of witness? And the latter is what you want to do. You want to work at your place of witness, and it's your quality of work and how you conduct yourself that is the ultimate witness, you know, to all the people you work with. So
hey, John, as we're sitting here, you come across as a very intentional man. You're a planner. So what are some of the things that you planned and have been intentional in your life to stay close to Jesus?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I had a regular devotional life, first thing in the morning, in the Word, and I had a very intentional plan in how I studied. I didn't just open the Bible. I just didn't use, I was never a fan of the daily devotionals. I liked them for a quick read of something, but I preferred to pick a book in the Bible or do a read through the Bible in a year plan and really dig in, not just read, but really ask the Lord to speak to me. That has, I think, been a real grounding. But in addition to that, I think one of the things that I believe that the first time this became apparent to me and of its value was a movement that was called the Promise Keepers. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but and the idea of having mentors in your life, and not only a mentor for you, but you mentoring others, and just the connection with men. And there was a period of time where we had a small men's group of about five guys that met continuously for years, and it was fantastic. It was a time when you would talk about things you normally don't have an opportunity to talk about and can just be really honest with one another and work through issues together. So that mentor-mentee relationship is great. And I'm blessed because right now under our men's ministry, I've been able to become a mentor to a couple of guys. And it's just really neat to see how God works through that.
John, I really appreciate your time on The Drop. You know, we've named it The Drop because we're saying is that wisdom is like dropping pennies in a jar. Mm. And we're hopefully we're going to fill up this jar, and the wisdom that we've gathered will flow into other people. So as part of being on The Drop, we're going to ask you to drop a penny in our jar, right, which symbolizes the wisdom you shared.
A little wisdom for the jar there.
Thank you, John.
You bet.